The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
It's just not enough. Oh, oh, man.
From New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
It's like the more you give, the more I want.
And Gary Knoll is heavy with us today. We have a formidable hour. Normally, I would open with the latest on health and healing. Take a look at our environment. Then go to our commentaries of the day, and finally our guest. But today I'm going to begin with our guest, and for the first half hour, we will take calls for the guest in about 20 minutes. He is Gerald Salante. Gerald is one of today's pioneers in trend strategy. He founded the Trends Research Institute and its Trends Journal in 1980, and has since been one of the nation's most sought-after diagnosticians and forecasters. He is able to do predictions in over 300 fields, from business and finance and politics and the environment, society, and technology. And he is also an author, and he has, well, all you have to do is just look at what he does. The Trends Journal, which is published four times a year, and you can get it at trendsresearch.com, has been remarkably accurate. So we're beginning with him to take a look at all the different things happening. Nice to have you with us today, Gerald.
Oh, it's always great being on with you, Gary. Thank you.
Gerald, I'm going to go through several issues and then select the issues that you find important to take on, all right?
All right.
In today's paper, there was a statement under the Post Business, quote, headline, $60 trillion in debt. Does anybody know what the U.S. owes? But that's the low figure. They also believe that a Lawrence Kotlikoff from Boston University, as economist professor, says it's $200 trillion. So we have Andrew Moylan of the National Taxpayers Union. We have David Walker, U.S. Comptroller General, $50 trillion, Andrew $60, and the professor $200 trillion. None of these figures is currently being cited for examples of why we should be more careful about the money we do spend and have a downsizing of all agencies across the board. That's one issue. Now I'll go through the others. You predicted over 2 months ago on this program that if gold went to 1,300, it would go up to 1,500 quickly. Here's the latest from Bob Chapman, Global Research. Quote, gold rebounds, dollar plummets, higher inflation is on the way. I'll quote the first paragraph. Gold is again broken out to new highs, and the silver's on the cusp of doing so well as well also. Unfortunately, more than 95% of the pundits were not on board. They believed it was going to go lower. The fight for monetary supremacy between the dollar and the gold for the past 16 months has been won by gold, and that is why gold is moving higher and the dollar lower. The recent intervention in the currency markets by Japan, ostensibly to weaken the yen, assisted by the U.S. and foreign central banks, won't strengthen the dollar for any appreciable period of time. The U.S. dollar has broken down, and there is no going back. How can anyone want to be long on the dollar when it has lost 80% of its value in 11 years versus purchasing power and more than 15% annually versus gold? The current rally that has just begun will last through February and perhaps through June before there is any meaningful correction. By then, we could be looking at $3,000 an ounce for gold. It's anyone's guess as to how high it's going, but one thing is for sure, it is going higher. Separately, the global system is in crisis. Not just here in America, towards a serious breakdown of the world economic and financial system by the spring of 2011. And I'll just quote the first paragraph. Quote, as anticipated in our most recent research, the second half of 2010 is readily characterized by a sudden worsening of the crisis marked by the end of the illusion of recovery maintained by the Western leaders and the thousands of billions swallowed up by the banks and economic stimulating plans of no lasting effect. The coming months will reveal a simple yet especially painful reality. The Western economy, and in particular that of the United States, never really came out of the recession. The startling statistics recorded this summer have only been the short-lived consequences of a massive injection of liquidity into a system which had essentially become insolvent, just like the U.S. consumer. At the heart of the global systemic crisis since its inception, the United States is, in the coming months, going to demonstrate that it is, once again, in the process of leading the economy and global finances into the heart of darkness. Because it can't get out of this very great U.S. depression, thus coming out of the political upheavals of the U.S. elections this November, with growth once again negative, the world will have to face the very serious breakdown of the global economic and financial system founded over 60 years ago on the absolute necessity of the U.S. economy never being in a lasting recession. Now, the first half of 2011 will dictate that the U.S. economy take an unprecedented dose of austerity, plunging the planet into new financial, monetary, and economic and social chaos. Next, surge in housing supply will drive down prices, from Mike Whitney, who you know. Here's what he says, quote, home ownership has become an albatross. Prices are falling, demand is weak, foreclosures have skyrocketed, and inventory of those foreclosed houses is backed up to the moon. If there's an upside, we can't see it. Everyone who bought a house in the last 6 to 7 years knows that he has been fleeced by bankers who were pushing fish wrap mortgages paper to line their own pockets. Prices do not reflect the underlying supply-demand fundamentals as much as they expose the massive mortgage laundering operation that was taking place in the shadow banking system. Hedge fund sharpies and other speculators walked away with billions, while credulous homeowners were lashed to an anvil and tossed in the East River. Finally, now there are signs the Fed teamed up with banks to get another pound of homeowners' flesh by keeping inventory off the market while they were exchanging $1.25 trillion in reserves for the banks' non-performing loans and mortgage-backed securities. Here's how it works. While the Fed was executing its quantitative easing program, the banks began to stockpile foreclosed homes to reduce supply and thus stabilize prices. It was all a hoax to conceal the transfer of reserves for garbage assets. Now that the banks are loaded with fresh reserves, they don't need to play along anymore, which is why they've started dumping their massive backlog of houses on the market. As inventory floods the market, housing prices will tumble and homeowners will take another pounding. And that's that. And one last one here. This is really an unusual one. Israeli company hired by the state government of Pennsylvania to spy on Pennsylvanians and other Americans, by David Lindorf from CommonDreams.org. Quote, the surprise disclosure that the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, through its State Homeland Security Agency, along with a number of local police departments in the state, have been employing a private Israeli security company with strong links to Mossad and the Israeli Defense Forces grows increasingly disturbing when the website of the company called the Institute of Terrorism Research and Response is examined. And it goes on to talk about how the state of Pennsylvania hired this Israeli security firm to look at anyone in any group that was protesting anything. So if you were protesting against banks, if you were protesting against the government, if you were protesting against vaccines, all protesters are now, in effect, in line to be investigated, infiltrated, and possibly put on terrorist list. So goes our democracy. Have you heard a word from Keith Olbermann? You won't hear a thing out of his mouth or anyone else on the left. It's as if no amount of egregious stealing of our rights is important to people on the left. And finally, this is from Les Leopold, who you know. And this I'm going to take a little bit of time with and then turn it all over to you. Poverty is through the roof, and billionaires are getting angry about not enough profits, from Alternet. Quote, The ranks of the working poor in the United States climbed to the highest level since the 1960s as a recession threw millions of people out of work last year, leaving one in seven Americans in poverty. The overall poverty rate climbed to 14.3%, or 44 million people. While 44 million Americans live in poverty, the richest men of finance sure are getting angry. First, Steve Schwarzman, head of the BlackRock private equity company, compares the Obama administration's efforts to close billionaires' tax loopholes to, quote, the Nazi invasion of Poland. Then hedge fund mogul David Loeb announces that he's abandoning the Democrats because they're violating, quote, this country's core founding principles, including non-punitive taxation, constitutionally guaranteed protections against persecution of the minority, and the right of self-determination, unquote. Instead of showing their outrage about the spread of poverty in the richest nation on earth, the super rich want us to pity them. Why are Wall Street billionaires so whiny? Is it really possible to make $900,000 an hour? That's not a typo. That's an hour. That's what the top hedge fund managers take in and still feel aggrieved about the way government is treating you? After you've been bailed out by the federal government to the tune of $10 trillion, also not a typo, in loans, asset swaps, liquidity, and other guarantees, can you really still feel like an oppressed minority? You'd think that Wall Street moguls would be thankful, not just thankful, down on their knees, kissing the ground taxpayers walk on and hollering hallelujah at the top of their lungs. These guys profited from pulling up the housing bubble, then got bailed out when the going got tough. And without taxpayers' largesse, these hedge fund honchos would be flat broke. Instead, they're back to hauling in obscene profits. These billionaires don't even have to worry about serious financial reforms. The paltry legislation that squeaked through Congress did nothing. Then too big and too interconnected to fail. In fact, the biggest firms got even bigger as they gobbled up troubled banks with the generous support of the federal government. No bank or hedge fund was broken up. Nobody was forced to pay a financial transaction tax. None of the big boys had a cap placed on their astronomical wealth. No, none of that happened. And now the big bankers are still free to create and trade the very derivatives that catapulted us into this global crisis. You'd think that billionaires would be praying on the altar of government and erecting statues on Capitol Hill in honor of St. Bailout. Your thoughts, the forum is yours.
Well, just on that last note that you were talking about, with the quotes from the billionaires whining, Schwarzman saying that, you know, closing the billionaire tax loopholes is, quote, the equivalent of the Nazi invasion of Poland, or that guy Loeb saying that non-punitive taxation, constitutionally guaranteed protections against persecutions of the minority. Suppose a Salenti said and compared the taxation of billionaires to the Nazi invasion of Poland, or the persecution of minorities. Boy, would I, boy, they, the toilet paper of record, the New York Times, they call what I do pessimism porn, but they let a Schwarzman and a Loeb get away with this. And just to double up on that, Gary, pick up yesterday's toilet paper of record. And there's billionaire Bloomberg with the rest of them bawling about how this is hurting them so much. And how all those people out there that supported Obama, now they're unhappy. Here's the quote. He said, I feel strongly we should not be, and he goes, success should not be frowned on. And I have lots of friends, wealthy people, made a lot of money, were big Obama supporters, gave him money, raised money for him, who are not happy now. They all say the same thing. Quote, I knew I was going to have to pay more taxes. Somebody's got to do it. And I've got the money. But I didn't expect to be vilified. Vilified. You want to tax, you know, and I love this Obama coming out. We're going to tax the rich. And you know what he calls the rich? He calls the rich Obama. people making between $200,000 and $250,000 a year. That's where the burden's going to fall upon. And there are people out there, you know, that we make that kind of money, and we work really hard to make that kind of money. And it ain't rich, because they're taxing you at every corner. They have every federal regulator coming down on you. You don't get away with a penny. But I have friends, says Bloomberg. Wealthy friends. Oh, yeah, they're all wealthy friends, all right. Yeah, and they don't like what's going on. Because people like Warren Buffett, the money junkies, that's all these people are. They're addicts. They're junkies. They can never have enough. They can never have enough. And now they're crying because they're going to take some of their junk from them. And what do? Is they have people like Buffett who's paying the same tax rate as his secretary. And they're squealing like little pigs. And that's what they are. They're all pigs. And the point you made about the study coming in with $200 trillion of debt, it's accurate. The country is going down, and it's going down quick. And the other point that I'd like to make that you made about how all these liberals out there, we call them the Obama apologists. We wrote about it in the Trends Journal. Here's one for you, Gary. Let's suppose it's 2007 and that great philosopher president was in office, George W. Bush. And you read the headline, U.S. drone kills six, quote, militants. I love that word, militants, in Pakistan. Oh, the liberals would be out there, boy. Oh, yeah, look at that crazy maniac Bush going into a sovereign country and killing people that haven't been brought to trial. We haven't heard anything about what they did, but they're suspected militants. So it's okay to kill them. Because now, of course, Obama and the military, they're the judge, the jury, and the executioners. They're sending in these predator drones, these kids, 20-something-year-olds. They've killed over 70 people since September 2nd in Pakistan, a sovereign nation. Oh, Pakistan, the place that you have 20 million-plus people that have been displaced out of their homes in just the last 2 months because of those floods, and the country's in turmoil, and the United States proxy war being fought on the United States' behalf by the Pakistani military has displaced another couple of million in the Swat Valley in North and South Waziristan. Those Pakistanis, and they just celebrated 9/11. Not one word, not one peep. Hey, why do they hate us? Oh, the great philosopher president, said George W. Bush, because they hate our freedom and liberty. And everybody claps and cheers. Oh, no, it couldn't be because of foreign policy, could it? It couldn't be because people like Obama selling the Saudis, what is it now? $60 billion with a B worth of armaments. Oh, you know, Gary, that great democracy, the Saudi Arabian kingdom.
They give all their women freedoms that we don't even give in America. Is that the same Saudi Arabia?
That's the one. These are our allies. And that word allies, yeah, Obama lies, Bush lies, Clinton lies. They're all lies. They're allies. And so what people are missing here, and this is what we do, of course, you start connecting all the dots, start putting it all together. And you're going to see something happen in this country, and this is what we're forecasting. It's going to either come from a terror strike, from ramping up the wars in the Middle East. Oh, that other great, and that great democracy over there in Iraq. The combat's ended, you know. The American troops are fighting, of course, but according to the propaganda in chief, the combat missions have ended, plus the Afghan war, and now this Pakistan war. And now put this into perspective. And there are not a lot of Afghanis in the United States, nor there are a lot of Iraqis. But boy, there are a lot of Pakistanis. And boy, there are a lot of angry ones because their loved ones are being slaughtered. by the United States proxy war being fought by the Pakistani military and sending in these predator drones. These are called extrajudicial killings. And the United States is behind it. So you think they're going to want to seek any revenge? So now you put all the pieces together. A terrorist strike comes. Go back to 9/11. When terrorists struck, the first thing they did was they closed down Wall Street. If you had certificates of deposit, you couldn't get them out. This time we believe they're going to close the banks. And you're not going to get your money out. Oh, it's guaranteed. It's guaranteed. But they'll do what they do in every third world nation as America's sinking into it. You just can't get your money out all at once like they did in Argentina and Brazil and all the other countries that have these kind of problems when they strike. So we're telling people to be cautious. Why would anybody put their money in the banks when they're not paying them any interest? Oh, because it's safe there. Yeah, somebody's going to break into your house and they're going to go into your garage and they're going to find that gold or money that you may have hidden in the mass of paint cans that you have over there, or that safe that you may have in a very safe place. So anybody to me that either puts their money in Wall Street or the casino, that rigged game, or keeps it in the bank and doesn't have enough on hand in the event of emergency deserves what they get. And just like the people, and again, when we're talking about regulation in this country, the only people that are being regulated, taxed, and pushed down into the ground are the little people. Whether it was that little kid out there in Portland, Oregon, that liberal Oregon out there who they busted for selling lemonade, remember that one? Where they want to hit her up for a $140 license,
surprising,
and then they roll out this
team to arrest the kid for selling lemonade. They're good at that,
right? They're good at that, and then they roll out this health inspector, another bureaucrat, a guy that's never worked a day in his life, and sucked his way up to get the job. And then he said, "Well, you know, we have to protect the big and the small alike." Yeah, like they protected the people against this what. This farm that factory where they recall a half a billion eggs. And when was the FDA there, Gary, in the last year? How many times did they come and visit?
None.
And I think, and I love the names that they give the eggs that they sell. You know, Hillendale Farms, Sunny Acre Farms. How about Auschwitz Farms? Chicken coop concentration camps, mass produced, mass consumed, mass murder. And that's what's going on at every level. And I'm sick, and by the way, I'm totally against any kind of health care program that doesn't address the health care issue. If you eat at McDonald's, if you think Domino's is pizza, if you get to wake up in the morning and you go to Dunkin' Donuts, I don't want to pay for your health care. And that's
agree.
What this country has to start getting. And by the way, when I talk about the liberals are responsible directly for where this Tea Party's going. Because the liberals have the intellectual capacity to see what's going on. But they don't have the guts to admit that they bought into a big hoax and a big lie, so they keep supporting Obama. But if they got out there, if they joined the Tea Party, if they joined protests, then we see it go in a different direction. The liberals are responsible for the direction this country is going in because they have the intellectual capacity to see what's going on, but they don't have the moral fortitude to admit that they've been conned by the propaganda in chief and the propaganda second guy out there, Biden. Oh, the summer of recovery. Remember that one? So, Gary, the ship is going down. It's sinking very quickly. This is the winter's coming upon us. Remember that parable of the grasshopper and the ant. This is the time, the summer's over. And remember, that ant didn't do it on his own. The ant was part of a colony. You have to get yourself aligned with like-minded people. Prepare for the worst to come, and also put yourself with like-minded people and direct the country in a direction where we could move into a renaissance. And about gold. Gold, if it was only to be as high as it reached in 1980 on January 20th, adjusted for inflation, it should already be at $2,300 an ounce, and that's why we're saying gold 2,000.
Okay. Let's take a few of these points in more specific detail. Now, I've noticed something interesting, Gerald, over the last 6 months. I want to see if you, who are out there and traveling, but I'm traveling a lot. I mean, filming on Poverty USA, one of my new documentaries, Death by Medicine, The 12 Tipping Points, Pathologizing Our Children, Greed Street. I have a lot of films that are coming to fruition and will be released in the next, 1 in 3 months, and then after that about every 6 months. So I'm having a chance to meet a lot of people. And what I'm finding is something that surprised me. I'm finding the people who at one time would have been kind of at the lead of saying, let us, while we still have time, in an unrushed and non-panicky way, let's take a look at where we believe the country is going, where we should go, how we can get there, what resources do we need, how can we support each other in this journey, and where historically we may have been doing things for ourselves, how we have to take a more spiritual path, subordinate our own egos so we can cooperate with one another. If I have a home and you have tools, then work together. If you have seeds and I have land, work together. So in other words, work with people based upon what you can offer and try to go off the idea that you're worth so much per hour historically. Instead, say, what do I need to be happy and healthy, and how can we create that? And in that light, I began to look at, as you know, I've looked at over 7,000 properties to try to find the right place and the right location that had the clean, unlimited water, the soil, enough privacy that you're not going to be in harm's way as easily as if you're in a suburb or major city, but close enough that you can market things to that, and where the climate is good 12 months a year, because with global warming, as you know, we have the coldest winters, the greatest snows, in the springtime, the greatest rains and flooding, in the summertime, the hottest summers. It's not like you have hot summers and then hot winters. You have generally weather patterns that are not conducive to quality of life during different seasons. But there are places where you do have quality of life. So after all said and done, when I'm going around the country and I'm looking at places, whether it's Taos, New Mexico, or Santa Fe, or Boulder, any of the other great places out there historically, I'm finding I do not see at this time any real groups of people wanting to do this. Instead, here's what I see. Now, mind you, this may be my own subjective impression, but I try to stay neutral. I'll just give you one example. In Sedona, which historically been like a mecca for the more spiritual, artistic, progressive-minded people, now I see a lot of people who are living in despair. I see an environment that's overdeveloped, massively overdeveloped. A lot of what was once made it great is now just, it looks like another strip mall driving through there of a lot of tacky places, a lot of them closed up. When you talk with the people, which I did, I spoke with about 300 people one-on-one recently, just a few weeks ago. I found that most are broke, most don't know what to do, and they're just kind of like hanging out and hiding out until they can't afford to be there. But if they weren't subsidized by someone making a living, they couldn't be doing their art or couldn't be doing anything else. Yet they all knew about crystals and homeopathy and colonics and raw. They were into all the nomenclature, but I call it like almost like the Deepak crowd. They can talk it, they don't walk it. You know, there's an underlying sense of disease. There's an underlying sense of incompleteness, loneliness, apathy. But it's hidden after you get past all of the hoorah-rahs and say, what are you actually doing? Tell me what you're actually doing to make it a better world. And I couldn't find the people who were actually doing that. Not to say that a few weren't. I'm just saying that I saw no great grouping. In fact, one of the people I met has a spa, and I looked at it, and it was really run down. And he was kind of sad, and he said, you know, I had hoped that more people would come here who were more spiritual-minded, but they come because they want a free place to stay and some free food. But, man, the next day they're split, and they're gone. And he said, I just can't put up with this anymore. I can't afford it. And he said, you know, I thought I had an epiphany, and I was told to come here. I said, no, you probably had an epiphany. But your epiphany said, go someplace, and this is where you ended up. But be honest, when you're in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong message and the wrong purpose, then recorrect yourself. Get back on the highway where you should be. Go to where you should be. I'm just not finding it this moment. Hopefully that will change when things get really bad. And then we will see the real progressives coming together. I do not see that. I see it in Ireland, Spain, Italy, France. I do see that. In Iceland, I see it. I'm in communication with whole communities. Here in the United States, we don't have an Esland. We don't have a Finhorn from Scotland. We don't have that place yet. And even if it were built tomorrow, I believe it would be empty outside of vagabonds and depressed artists coming by, you know, looking for some free food. I don't see a committed community enough at this time to make your idea of sustainability working together in mine. I don't see it happening. That doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. Absolutely, we should do it. Because I believe that at some time in the next 24 months, for the working class, the working middle class, those who are going to be adversely affected, I believe they will be forced to change. They will not do it willingly. They're tied in and addicted to their comforts. And even while the water is boiling and they're in the pot being boiled, they've developed a comfort. They've anesthetized themselves with distractions and promises from Democrats or Republicans or teabags that things are going to be better. Nothing's going to be better that I can see for the average person. For the rich, powerful, upper middle class, yes. And so therefore, I believe that we must go ahead and do what we're going to do. But I think we must all, in the progressive movement who are doing this, I believe we must have a reality check and realize that we're way far ahead of the curve. And it's going to be at least a year or 2 years till the bottom falls out, till your predictions come true, and I believe they will, till Michael Rupert's predictions come true, and Les Leopold's, and hundreds of other progressives, and Chris Hedges, and then people say, what happened? And we're going to say, are you awake now? Yeah, what the hell happened? You were asleep. You were in a different place. You were a believer. You were a true believer. You believed your Democrats or Republicans or whoever was going to bail it out, make it all better, bring your jobs back, and it didn't happen. More jobs lost. You had to make cuts. Your fire department was cut. Police department was cut. Crime increased. Your suburbs started to look like battle zones. Where was I? You were watching The Housewives of New Jersey. Or Skanks on Parade, or whatever show that epitomizes the lowest of human nature, and you were stuck in it. Why? Because you were so damn afraid to look in the mirror and see the truth of what you were and what we had become. Your thoughts, Gerald?
Well, on the community effort, I have to say that right up here in Kingston, New York, in our community, whether it's the wonderful farmers markets that we have, and now, just out of nowhere, a group of people are putting together what they call the O Positive Festival, bringing the artists in the community out with bands and artists of different in areas, and they're bringing doctors in to help those who can't afford health insurance, giving them checkups, a lot of alternative practitioners coming in. So they're holding this huge festival where they're putting arts and health together. And it's the first year they're doing it, and it looks like it's going to be a huge success. There are progressive-minded people that want to put things into directions that can change it, and it has to be done, Howard Zinn said it, from the grassroots up.
Okay, I agree with you, but let me just add this, that remember AIDS for Africa, Food for the Hungry, the Hunger Project, great concerts. Everyone was attending. And then after everyone left, it was a pigsty. I was the one in Dallas. I was a keynote speaker. And you would have thought that you had a bunch of inbreds who just spent the week celebrating a brother and sister's wedding. I had never seen a place so filled with alcohol and tobacco and fast food wrappers, all the while talking about feeding the hungry, more consciousness, green. We have to do something where the community is not based upon artists coming in, but rather what is going to happen 7 days a week, 24/7.
Well, oh, look, I agree. And but what I'm saying is that they're taking steps and trying to do things. And to what I'm saying about getting together with like-minded people, whether it's people from a book club or a martial arts class or whatever it might be, just starting to build groups, small groups, small groups, small groups with a common goal. And by the way, people say to me, you know, Salenti, you know, you keep coming out there and you tell everything what's wrong. How about some solutions? Well, in the upcoming Trends Journal, in the autumn edition, I'm going to have some of Salenti's solutions. And here are three of them. Number one. Dramatically cut the defense budget, close all the bases overseas. World War II is over. I know Berlusconi likes 18-year-old kids, but he's no Mussolini. You know, I know Sarkozy, you know, is you know, he's not my kind of guy, or either is Angela Merkel, but she's no Hitler. What are we doing with all these bases over there? I know they're nice places to travel in Italy and Germany, but we don't have to be there. And what are we doing in Japan? Oh, we're protecting U.S. interests, they say, in the South China Sea. Whose interests? What interests? What multinationals' interests? They're not my interests. These people have been fighting for centuries. You're going to get in the middle of that one? Close all the bases. Shrink the military budget that is now at $1.2 trillion when you bring in defense-related expenditures outside the Defense Department, number one. Number two, no more tax breaks and incentives. I'm sick and tired of it. You know, I have my master's degree in public administration, and I worked in my earlier years in urban development and all of this, and economic development agencies. What a bunch of baloney. What a bunch of jerks. Look how they destroyed this country. They cut up beautiful, beautiful areas, urban areas, put highways through them, knocked down gorgeous old buildings to put up federal and state buildings that have all the architectural finesse and the
Stalin's
old Soviet
tomb.
Union. You know, so no more loan guarantees, no more tax breaks, no more subsidies. Cut the subsidies. They're only going to the rich. So that's number two. Number three, tax all religious organizations and all nonprofits. Before I go further, if you give a donation, you get a charitable deduction. But who are these religions? There are more religions out there than used car dealerships, like this clown they had down that the media pumped up out of nowhere to inflame the people's hatred, this guy in Gainesville, another Jones. Tax all the religions, all of them, all of them. And he won't have issues like this cultural center, this Islamic cultural center. Tax them all. They're bringing in revenue, and they're living the high life. And they all don't have such a great track record anymore for us to look up to. You know, I was raised Catholic. You know, and I got my scars. You know, I got beat up viciously by Sister Marie Rosaire in the fifth grade, and she perforated my middle ear and then left me back. And I look back now and I say, boy, I'm glad Father Foley was a ladies' man. So none of these religions have much to stand on. Tax them. They're bringing in income. Let's treat everybody equally. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, said Christ. So this is how we could balance the budget. We could pay down the debt. Cut the defense budget. We don't need this kind of defense budget. We don't need a third of what it is. Number two. All no more subsidies for big pharma, for big agriculture, for the rest of the crooks out there, and these tax breaks and loan guarantees that they give to these sleazy developers all over the country. Oh, they're going to create jobs. It's always the same baloney. And again, I know the facts. I have a I'm educated in this field. I read the studies, the tax breaks that they give them, these bogus stadiums from these bogus plans of bringing in General Electric into Michigan or General Motors into Mississippi, wherever they may be. The weight of the burden goes on the people. Current events form future trends. Schlumberger, that huge, huge oil maintenance company, services company, Denton, Texas, last week, they gave a 50% property tax break because they're going to create jobs. How about giving me a tax break? How about all those people that can't pay their taxes? How about all the people's homes that the city of Denton, the city of Yonkers, the city of Los Angeles, how are all the homes that they've taken away from people because they couldn't pay their taxes? But hey, a $20 billion company that's a Fortune 500 company, give them the breaks. You want to balance the budget? You want to bring prosperity back? Those are just three of Salenti's solutions.
Very reasonable. And I would go further. I would say give a flat income tax to every person, no matter what their income, and with no deductions, and eliminate the IRS completely. And every corporation, no matter what they do, give them one small flat tax. All, that way you would bring in an additional $1.5 trillion a year. You would eliminate the IRS. You'd eliminate all these deductions. You could eliminate property taxes and payroll taxes. You'd eliminate all these taxes so the average person would take home more. Corporations would take more. Rich people could have more. But at least everybody would pay the same amount as a percentage. Right now, if you're wealthy, you don't pay any taxes. Corporations, the wealthiest corporations, don't pay any taxes. Small business people pay the burden of taxes. They pay the highest ratio of taxes and the most taxes as a group, and that's not fair. And this way, nobody is left out. Everybody has to contribute something. So if you did that, and on top of having no-fault medical insurance, so you couldn't have ambulance-chasing people suing all the time, which is just it's an epidemic in America, but also you wouldn't have defensive medicine. And the only reason they give you extra x-rays and extra medicine, extra medical techniques, because they don't want to be sued and have a lawyer say, but didn't you check for this? Well, no, we didn't need to. Well, you should have. And now this way, 1% of all the hospital, for-profit, non-profit doctors all go into a pool, and that pool goes to pay for the actual compensations, capped, so that a person will not be checking out with millions of dollars, but rather be helped with the conditions that have been made bad and made whole in income they've lost, and save hundreds of billions of dollars. We could balance a budget in a few years if we did this. Also, while we're at it, why don't we also tax those people who are in hedge funds and equity partnerships at regular income instead of the 15% they pay now? That would bring in an enormous amount of money based upon how much money they're speculating in. And why not, while we're at it, just ban trading and derivatives completely and call null and void the $545 trillion they're holding out there in credit default swap positions?
Oh, absolutely. This whole thing, it's just gambling. They call it another name, synthetic collateralized debt obligations, auction rate securities, derivatives. They produce nothing. They produce nothing. They make nothing other than money junkies. They give them more junk. That's all they do. Look, you know, and that, oh, here's another thing I'd like to talk about. And this affects a lot of small business people as well. And you were talking about the IRS. Number one, as we all know, those that follow trends and read the news and information, the IRS is going to the lowest wage earners in the country, up to the middle class. They're letting the big guys go, and they're squeezing the little people more and more, just like that lemonade kid that they squeezed her. Number one. But number two on this whole issue about what they're doing to the small business people, have you noticed the incompetence graft and corruption going on with his so-called infrastructure repair. You know, I'm not kidding. My father, may have saw, rest in peace, was in the construction business. I grew up in it. I know this stuff. I know what it looks like and how to do it. When are they taking 4 months, 5 months, closing down major roads to repair two-bit bridges and road repair? What kind of scam is going on over here? They're closing up businesses all around the area over here that rely on the summit tourists. They can't get through. They're detoured all over the place to do road work, Gary, that shouldn't take more than a month or a month and a half. They're stretching it out for over a year. They're draining the people. These politicians in New York, in New Jersey, oh, by the way, that's the other way to really save a lot of money. We don't need new laws. Only enforce the ones that we had that they took away, like Glass-Steagall, like Robertson-Patman, like the Sherman Antitrust Act. We don't need who could make up a job description like this one? Lawmaker. You know, when I grow up, I think I'm going to be a lawmaker. We don't need these clowns in the state house for us to pay them so they could live red carpet lives like Rat Wrangle over here in New York or the rest of them. These people, you know why they feel like they're the elite and better than anybody else? Because that's the way they live. That's the way they're treated. So we can also save a lot of money, but we don't cut the sessions of these houses. We don't need new laws. And to stop this criminality that's going on with these construction firms and the sweetheart deals that the political thieves are giving them, they're ruining America's small business because they don't close down around the big guys. They would never do that if a huge pyramid shopping mall was there. Oh, no. But we'll inconvenience the small people so we can get them out of the way and we won't have any competition at all, as you well know, as they're doing with the agricultural bill.
I would go one step further. I think you're being conservative. I would say bring in a group of scholars and humanists and ethicists to examine the state and federal and local ordinances and laws and repeal those that are really draconian, are punitive, and are counterproductive or counterintuitive. And I believe you would eliminate probably 90% of the laws now on the books.
I agree. That's a great addition. No more new ones, and repeal all these draconian ones. That's what's going on. As I said it over and over again, all of these people out there calling, you know, Obama a communist, a Marxist. No, this is fascism. It's the merger of state and corporate powers, and they're abrogating more and more of our rights as we speak. Wasn't that a wonderful little story, by the way, that the liberals just turned a blind eye to last week? And this was in the New York Times, all over. Court dismisses a case asserting torture by CIA.
Yes.
And how the Obama administration has codified so much of the torture and rendition and other heinous acts that were put in place under the Bush administration. Not a peep, like you were mentioned, the Obermans and all the rest of them who suck up and will never say anything bad if they're going to lose favor with their masters. How could we call this a moral nation when we have laws like this and court? You know what, I've said this before, Gary. You could sum up what's wrong with the United States into six simple words. Harvard, Princeton, Yale, bullets, bombs, and banks. And when you look at now the Supreme Court, what kind of person who's awake at any level can't see how the fix is in when you have a so-called Supreme Court rigged with Harvard and Yale people? And again, they're the elites. They're better than we are. Just ask them. They'll tell you.
And the fact that we are refusing to examine the history of the Koch brothers and the other individuals who have put together massive fortunes to fund think tanks, the Cato Institute, the Free Enterprise Institute, the Heritage Foundation. There are now several hundred of these, and almost all of the people who are invited on television, either liberal or conservative, radio and TV, to give an opinion on something come from these foundations. And they're all talking corporatists. So I think it's rather remarkable that we never take the time to look at the who benefits from the policies they're talking about. So when it came to the war in Iraq, they didn't invite you or I on to talk about why we shouldn't be in Iraq. Instead, they invite the generals on who all have contracts, never ask them for conflict of interest information. And so then we become a pro-war nation. We go up to as many as 70% of Americans wanting to see the war go forward. And now we're not willing to go back and hold anyone accountable for any of the crimes committed in the name of that illegal war. I say that this tells a lot about what we're not willing to be, honest and forgiving. I'm not seeking vengeance. I'm not seeking to put people in prison. I am seeking a truth and reconciliation commission. Just as
this is where I would part company. I would love to see a war crimes tribunal and put people like Tony Blair and George Bush and Cheney. Who knew what when? You know, this Blair is, you want to talk about a sociopath. Did you see any of the excerpts from his new book?
Yes.
And he says things like he has no regrets about the Iraq war.
Well, why should he?
He
wasn't
wrong.
The one injured or killed.
Yeah. And then he says things like that he was a manipulator, that he knew how to play on people's feelings. These people are sociopaths. Why, you know, if I have two drinks and I get stopped, you know, they treat me like a criminal. But yet we can't find out whether or not this nation was being taken to war for fake reasons. You know, why can't people call mass murder what it is? You have Obama killing people at a mass level, and you have it going on right now in Pakistan. Just go to Yahoo or any of put in Pakistan drone attacks. Every day they've been happening virtually. This is mass murder. Why aren't these people being brought up on war crimes? Because they're better than we are.
Well, also they control public opinion. One of the ways that the average person has been conditioned not to think is to have someone else do all the thinking for them. And in such a debate, whether it's on AIDS or obesity in children or a failed health care system or the destruction of our environment, you name the issue, you never really have the best spokespersons who represent a truthful position. Instead, you have all their best covered. The ruling elite have funded both conservative and liberal think tanks, so they win. These are the Reagan Democrats, of which Obama's one, Clinton, male and female, are both, and Rubin was one. And they all honor. The politics is irrelevant. The party loyalty is irrelevant. It's making sure that the vested interests do well. Remember, when Clinton became a president, he was worth about $800,000. Now he's worth about $160 million. He is the wealthiest president in American history, post-president. And that and his foundation's up close to $700 million. That came because he never once went after the people who were the real oligarchs and power holders in our society. Obama's not stupid. What's interesting to me is when I hear real stupid statements like O'Reilly or Glenn Beck or Sean Hannity saying, oh, the socialist Obama. To the contrary, if he were a socialist, then he would be redistributing wealth. He is not. He would stop the support of the corporate people feeding at the public trough. He has not. He would stop the military-industrial complex from massive gouging on profit-taking. He is not. He would have been concerned about people's ability to feed themselves and stop foreclosures by executive order and put a moratorium on them. He is not. So all the things that a real socialist would have done, he has done none of that. In fact, he has done everything that a neocon has done. And that's rather remarkable when William Kristol and others will say that, oh, he is a liberal, and I'm looking and saying, I'd like to know what he's done that is liberal. I haven't seen it. Your final closing comments.
Well, you're 100% of what you're saying about Obama. As I said, the merger of state and corporate powers is called fascism. And not only did Clinton not do anything to rein in the oligarchs, remember, it was under Robert Rubin and Larry Summers and their protege, Timothy Geithner, who's now Treasury Secretary, where they dismantled the regulations that made these rich banking firms become richer and bigger. And, of course, then after Robert Rubin leaves, where does he go? Oh, funny. He went to Citigroup, you know, after they became this huge business. And then when you listen to Obama, listen to his one of his recent speeches, he's going to hold the line on spending, but I'm not going to take a penny away from national defense. And you tell a liberal that, and they say, well, you know, he only could do so much. He's doing his best.
Yeah.
So now the nation is lost as long as we have the Republicans and Democrats in power.
Gerald Salante, we're out of time. Thank you very much. I look forward to our next conversation. You can read more from the Trends Journal by going to trendsresearch.com. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. We'll have more tomorrow.
Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.